Got car trouble?
Hold on to your lug nuts. It's time for an overhaul.
Now's the time to talk with Jerry on the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show.
Well, if you're one of the millions who own one of them gas-drinking, piston-clanking, air-polluting, smoke-belching, four-wheel buggies from Detroit City, then pay attention. I'm about to sing your song, son.
Good morning, Southern Arizona, and the rest of you out there in cyberspace. Welcome to the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show right here on ESPNTucson.com. ESPNTucson.com. 1490 AM, 104.9 FM. So we got two stations running simultaneously. So if one don't get it while you're cruising around Southern Arizona, switch it over to the FM station, 104.9 or 1490 AM. So you got two. It'll cover you. I've been testing it for about 6 months. Seems like it's getting pretty good now. I'm Jerry Simmons, your host. Along with me, Mr. Test First, Don't Guess, Brian Fuller.
That's right. Good morning.
Automotive specialist. Now, I'm glad that Brian showed up this morning because me and Sam, we've been having a time with allergies and... So we're only good for about 5 minutes, and we have to rotate to see who breathes.
Undisclosed circumstances.
Yeah. talking to Brian last night, and he said, I don't know if I can get up in the morning. He said, I'm really tired. I'm looking at him. I don't think he made it up yet.
Not yet.
No, I tell you what. Go to bed at 8 o'clock and lay there till 11:30. Can't sleep. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And then up at 3:30. So you... scared that you won't be late for the show.
Hey,
sounds like the perfect day.
I caught the alarm this morning at 4:15. First time that I have used that alarm probably in 15 years. And then I drive out. By the way, people, if you're headed south on Cobb Road, when you get down to Irvington, you're going to find it blocked off. So heads up, you know, take an alternate route, go, you know, like golf links. If you're going to I-10 or something, but I come in on Irvington to Cobb this morning. PD, Tucson Police Department sitting there, had that lane on the south side blocked off completely. You couldn't make a left going in off of Irvington. You couldn't go straight through, and everybody was just having to do U-turns, and then it rechanneled you back. So I went back about, I think it's a total reroute of about 5 miles. So if you're running on South Cobb this morning, keep that in mind, because that was real, and I did not plan that. It took me 45 minutes to get here this morning. So, but I'm normally anal about it, so I leave a little bit early, just in case.
I'm glad you set the alarm early, 4:15.
Boy, if I would have had to go through all that, I would have turned around and went back to bed.
Brian just be like, yeah, I'm good. I'm chilling.
I'd have been calling you, too. Brian, where are you?
I'm tired.
Automotive. Talked to Brian last night, and we were talking about automotive. And I've been in business 45 years. It has not changed.
Oh, really?
Parts is the same.
Parts are not the same. You don't even want to get me started on parts today.
Why, you don't like parts that don't work, even though they're new?
I don't like do-it-twice auto repair.
Do-it-twice auto repair?
Yeah.
You know how many what is there, like 400 independent garages around Tucson, Arizona? About 400 or something like that. Do you know all 400 have the same problem?
Yeah, I can believe it.
I mean, we can't even blame this on somebody like Merle's. I mean, we can't blame it all on them. Because
tell me.
You can get... You can get parts that don't work from any parts house on the planet. Believe it or not, these parts houses on the planet actually buy it from a supplier. So, you know, I've learned a long time ago, don't shoot the messenger. You just roll with a punch. Tell a customer, if we can get the parts and they stay good while we put them on and go through the test after we get them finished, we're good to go. If we can't, you know, I remember I'd been in business like 3 years, Brian. I put the customer on the phone to the parts house and let the parts house people try to explain to the customer why I can't get their part, a one that will work. And, you know, and I've done that, oh, probably not over 10 times, but we're the guy that go between the consumer and the parts house. When you can't get it and you just keep getting a line of bull like I've been getting from people, you just, after a while, you just go, hang on just a second. Let me, you can talk, you know, if you want to talk to somebody, let's talk to somebody and see if you can get a difference. Story than I've been getting. Mike
yeah,
used
what
to
gets
get belligerent.
Is you know, at 3:30 in the afternoon, car's got to go by 5. The part that you just installed took 2.5 hours to install because it does, and you have to take half the dash apart.
Sure.
Well, guess we should have bench test that thing before we even thought about putting it in because it didn't work.
I think that's where we're going. We're going to have to start bench testing. We don't have to build a diagnostic center to test parts that come out of a box before it goes on there. About the only thing you can get out of a box is, fuel additive? Maybe. Then, you know, we're always testing that stuff anyway, so you can get a box of fuel additive. So if your car can be fixed with a can of fuel additive, you'll probably be good to go. Other than that, we're shooting crap just like you are. We're just waiting. We've got backup suppliers for different parts. I've seen my service counter order parts from 3 different places because of the time that was spent having parts delivered and getting the right part. He started ordering 3 parts. We had one guy doing nothing but running a shuttle, delivering, taking parts back that we didn't use or they weren't the first to show up. I said, come on, guys, let's quit doing that. It's cost me too much money to run these things back. But that's how bad I've seen the parts get.
They arrived damaged, you know. I had those Chevy Astro vans, they didn't make very many of those.
No, they only made like one.
Yeah, maybe one. Yeah, two.
Two?
Yeah. I needed transmission lines for these things. There was 2 transmission lines in Tucson.
Yeah, but you were working
2
on a 1927 Chevy Astro van.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, don't work on Astro vans anymore because you can't get parts.
Don't work on Corvettes because you can't stand it.
Well, General Motors is another deal. They're still on strike. But, you know, I get one of those tranny lines, and one of them's damaged. I can't use it. And I'm going, are you kidding me? And there's not any more to be had in Tucson. So
that's the reason that one damaged line was just floating around. Yeah. Everybody kept returning it back. They kept putting it in circulation.
So I got to wait a day and get another one from Phoenix. And I get another one from Phoenix. And the quick couplers that I wanted to replace because they're known to leak.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's automatic. You just replace the quick couplers. Otherwise, they will leak.
Yeah. So they'll give you about a day and a half till it's out of the shop.
No, if it's lucky, if it makes it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so the aftermarket quick couplers that I got 4, and every one of them was machined wrong. I couldn't insert the line into the thing far enough to make the quick coupler snap ring snap onto it. So here we sit. A job that's over $3,000 of repairs being held up by a $50 transmission line or a $20 fitting.
Right.
You know, and so it's sitting here another day. Got to get the fittings. I can't buy the fittings from General Motors because there's none in Tucson. There's none in Phoenix. Or the lines, there was none in Tucson. There was none in Phoenix.
Right.
General Motors is on strike, so if you want anything and it's not here, you're not going to get it because they're not going to ship it from California. So, Houston, we got a problem, you know. So, luckily enough, Watson had the fittings for the radiator for the lines. Yeah. And, of course, we got the OE fittings, screwed them in, and the lines went in and they didn't leak.
Yeah.
But, I mean, these are everyday challenges that we're facing these days. I mean, it's like, holy smokes, you got to work twice as hard to do about the same as what we did 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it gets frustrating. It's frustrating for us as shop owners. It's frustrating for the technicians. And it's also frustrating for the customers. You know, I mean, we're here to try and get you the best parts that we possibly can that'll have the longevity to, you know, make it as long as the last part did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're on your side, customers, but it is a challenge. It is really a challenge, you know.
Just go buy a new car. Do away with all that stuff. I wouldn't put that $50 line on a car. I'd go buy another $35,000 car.
Uh-huh.
Replace it. You know.
You could do that.
And wait till something goes wrong with it in about 3-4 months and try to get a part for it. Oh, I'm sorry. Simmons 4x4, we haven't made that part for that car in the aftermarket yet. Oh, okay. It's on back order. I love that one.
Yeah,
it's on
national back order. You can't get it.
You know what that tells me? That's a piece of crap to start with. If you've got it on national back order, that means you've got a lot of failures. And people say, oh, no, that means it's just not sold enough, so we don't build them. You won't bet?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
In the trenches. This is how it is.
Yep, in the trenches. In the trenches. And I'll tell you, Brian and I were talking about why we don't open on Saturday. Saturday, your chances are getting the right part and getting it to a shop, and the shop have a fighting chance of finishing it and getting you your vehicle back so that you can have it back by Sunday, which is next day, is almost
slim to none.
Slim to none. We tried it. It didn't work. And I said, rather than to just rent a car for the weekend if you break down and you really got to have a car and you're sitting in your parking lot.
Well, we tried it, too. And, I mean, I did, you know, for years. Mm-hmm. I says, you know, we'll run, you know, 8 to noon. We'll get something done. And it seems like every time that you
didn't do it.
Your intentions were good.
Yep.
You want to help the customer mm-hmm. and get their car back to them, mm-hmm. but something would happen.
Yep.
Then the car's sitting there apart, and we can't get something for it
yep.
until Monday
right.
or even Tuesday.
Right.
And it's just not productive on a Saturday, it seems like, anymore. With the complexity of these cars, too, makes it even worse.
Oh, yeah. We've even buttoned cars up on Friday afternoon and said, we don't have the part. We won't have the part till next week. But it is runnable. We'll button it back up for you. You can take it for the weekend. We ordered a part in as soon as that son of a gun comes in, and we can ID the part that's coming in is the correct part. We will call you up. You bring it in, drop a car off. We'll get it fixed and get it back to you. But I there's not enough fingers and toes to get past that one. That's how many we've actually released on Friday afternoon because of a parts issue. We'll send you with a car that'll run. Your air conditioning may be working on a part-time basis or something like that, but at least it won't stop you. And the damage that could occur to the vehicle because of the repair not being done has already occurred, and it won't do any additional damage to anything else. And at least you can go to the doctor if you have to, or go grocery shopping or something like that. Are you going to jump in and go to New York? It depends on what it is.
I get those phone calls a lot where, you know, a customer says, well, my car's doing this, and it's shaking, and the check engine light's on, and, you know, is it safe to drive? Well, my first answer would be no. You know, one, if you're concerned because you know your car and how it runs, and if you all of a sudden decide that it's not working the way it's supposed to be, then odds are it's probably not safe to drive, and you probably should just get a rental car. You know, it's cheaper than doing the alternative of continuing to drive that car and doing damage to it as a result of whatever is wrong with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's impossible, number one, to diagnose it over the phone. So, you know, sometimes it's just safer to get a rental car.
Yeah, and be done with the aggravation. Speaking of drivability issues, tires, I had the experience this week. Started on last Saturday. Wife says, I just pulled a nail out of the side of the tire. I said, what'd you do that? And she says, it just was too tempting. I couldn't not pull that nail out. And I was on Sunday. And then all of a sudden, she says, and then I have to jump in it real quick and find a tire store that's open. Because that little place that when I pulled the nail out, it started leaking really quick. I said, uh-huh. Anyway, it's through the side, so you can't fix one if you got a nail through the side of the sidewall. And she took it in, and then she said, I think I'll just, it's about time for us to get another set of tires. It's got 24,000 miles on it, 17. And I'm going, okay, so we got a set of tires on a 2017 F-150, 24,000 miles on it. Those tires are chunking out. Chunking out is these little things that looks like, remember the old racers back when people used to use a pencil in school, had the racers on the end of it, and after a while they get old and start chunking out, coming apart? That's what it is. So got to looking at those things, and I'm thinking, wait a minute. So I turned the tires so that they'd be out in the sunlight, and I inspected all four of my tires that were on the ground, and lo and behold, the only one it wasn't chunking out was the spare that was on to replace the one that had the nail in it. So looked at it, and I thought, well, let me call Ford, and I'm going to see what Ford says about this tire. It's a Goodyear tire. So I called Ford and talked to one of the service writers over there, who's a very nice, polite person. And I asked him, I said, is there any, like, adjustments or something for this Goodyear tire with only 24,000 miles on it because it's chunking out? And it's getting down. I look at the inside of the tread, and I can see where the actual knobs on the tire are actually breaking away from the casing. And I'm going, this time to replace these things. So, anyway, I talked to Ford, and, of course, I've got not the answers I was wanting to, because I guess they said they tried to educate me on the road conditions in Tucson, Arizona, and when you drive a 4x4 and you're off-road, you know, you got to remember, this truck is housed under garage. It don't go. If it goes off the road, that means you missed a turn. But they were all chunked out, and I thought, you know, nobody can explain to me about that. So I got to thinking about it, and I told myself, self, you've been around the automotive industry for about a week and a half. You should be able to figure this out. I come up to a conclusion. When they put these tires on these trucks or on a vehicle, they're set for the comfort of the consumer, okay? It's a pickup. Now, when you set these tires, they're set at 35 pounds on a truck. And you put you put a horse trailer on the back end of it, which only adds about 850 or 750. So now you've got, wow, I've got 750 pounds in a vehicle in the back end that will pull 12,200 pounds. So you assume that you're okay. Well, you got a 35-pound, you've heard me say, do the math. Got a 35-pound tire on the back of a truck. You're pulling a 3,500-pound, in her case, 2,200 pounds on their little aluminum trailer. And you got a low tire. So if you take the weak sidewall because the tire is not really made to haul with, other than not made to haul with, and it's on there, and it starts moving around, if you stop and think about what caused a tire to chunk out, it's just like the pencil racer. It's racing across a surface, a rough surface, and it starts to break apart. Right, Brian?
Yep.
That makes sense?
Absolutely.
And then when you got all four of them, but they're set for comfort of the patient, of the client, which patient, because you got to really be patient if you plan on doing this. And
well, you got to look at a good majority of our roads and the condition of the surface of these roads. You know, for instance, I walk across my cul-de-sac to go get the mail, and I'm walking across there, and I'm going, good Lord. I mean, this surface is not smooth at all. It's like just a bunch of little rocks
side by side. You're just older and you actually realize that they've been like this all your life.
Yeah, and then drive up and down Overton. Let me tell you something. That's one rough road, too, you know?
Well, I come to the conclusion that if you adjust it down. So when I got the tires, I ordered the upgrades. I got a 10-ply to go on it. And we were having a conversation. He said, Jerry says, you know, if we set these things past 35 because you got tire pressure monitors up there, I don't know how far you can actually go. Do you know that if you can go up to – I said, I want you to put me a set of 10-plies on it. I want you to set them at 55. And he says, well, what if a light comes on? I said, that's what they make black tape for. I'm not playing with this thing anymore. I want the heavier sidewalls on it. I want some decent tires on this thing. So – put the tires on it, set them at 55, test drove it, not a problem. Not a problem whatsoever with the tire pressure monitors. And the reason I know he wasn't going to have a problem is because when I got ready to haul that fifth wheel with it, the fifth wheel trailer, I took it from 35 and pushed it up to 52. That was the maximum coal you can put on it. And maximum air pressure, coal pressure that you can put on the tire.
And the warning light did what?
Didn't do nothing. It was fine. It was fine. And so now I've got it 55. You know what else I'm going to do? I'm going to take it up to 80 and see what it says. And if it comes on, oh, well. It's got the in the dash, it'll tell you exactly what the tire pressures are. And as long as it's not down to 2 or 3 like it was, should be all right. So if you've got these and you're upgrading your tires, now the thing that you don't want to do is change the size of those tires. For some reason, that makes a big difference now in the rotation on different vehicles. So when you're putting the tires on and you say, oh, I want to step it up, the tire size up, make sure that your computer and stuff will adapt for that, that it can be reset, that you're not going to be out 10, 15 mile per hour. I've seen some monster tires on a bunch of vehicles. Most of them you have to go in, which you don't have the option, and you reprogram it.
Yeah, you can reprogram the tire size with the computer if you have the computer that's able to do that.
Exactly. So you need to do just a little bit of homework before you actually upgrade the tires.
I got a question actually for you guys.
What?
So, remember when I was telling you, I think like 3-4 weeks ago, that I was with my friend, we were coming back from Mount Lemmon, and I filled up my tires because the light came on. And I think that was like 3-4 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So my light just came back on just recently. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to Phoenix today. Mm-hmm. So is that normal? And I filled up at 35 PSI. Is that a normal thing that after a month that you would see that light come on again?
Absolutely not.
No, it's not normal. You got a leak.
Take it in.
Before I go to Phoenix,
yep,
with that,
exactly.
I make sure that I got air in your spare and you don't have just a can of Fix-A-Flat.
Oh, no.
But I would check and find out where the nail is. And if it's in there or screwed, don't back the screw out with a screwdriver and don't pull it out. Just leave it in.
Is that from personal family experience?
Personal experience.
No, yeah, no. I was just like, this is interesting that would come back on, so I wanted to make sure that if that was normal or abnormal.
You can always, you've got a tire gauge, keep a tire gauge with your vehicle and then pull it out and do the tire check yourself and you can verify that.
And they have the Phillips are like circuits.
They're pretty, you know.
Now keep in mind too that, you know, it's not always because of a nail or a screw in the tire. It could be that the tire's actually leaking around the bead.
And it could be that the tire's actually leaking through the rubber on the tire like it was on my little Honda.
Mm. Right through. I've had them leak right through the sidewalls.
They go through. You can put them in a tank of water like we used to 100 years ago.
Like we
hold
still
them down,
do.
And they're just bubbling. You see the little bubbles in there. You think, this is so cute. This is so cute. It's stupid, but it's cute. But, yeah, it works out that way. October is car care month.
It means it's a good idea to start thinking about, you know, we're going through some temperature changes now.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great out. But it seems like every spring, every fall, when we get a, you know, a good 30, 40 temperature degree swing, some of these things on the automobile start coming up and saying, hey, I'm going to be a problem for you.
Well,
you know, things will start leaking. Batteries, they like to fail more in the spring and the fall than they do, you know, during the middle of summer.
I had the pleasure of doing that last week, too,
you know,
on my tractor. I was disappointed. You know what else has a fluctuating other than the temperature? Gas prices. Have you seen the gas prices over the last week, how much it fluctuated?
So weird.
Oh, my gosh. I was driving, I'm going, it was 14 cents less yesterday when I drove by here. And then you start second-guessing yourself, say, well, maybe it's 2 days ago.
Yeah, and then you makes you wonder, the day before, are we still using the same gas they had in that tank the day before? And they just raised it up 14 cents that day?
Yeah.
It's like a Mandela effect. It's weird.
Yeah. And when you start looking at that, my brother called me, and I asked him about it. And he says, yeah, so it's about the same in North Carolina as it is in Arizona. I'm going, okay. Now, If Brian and I sit here on this radio and I said, okay, Brian, I'm going to charge $50 for a tune-up on a four-cylinder Mazda. And you said, okay, I'll charge $50 on a four-cylinder Mazda also. You know, they can put, a $20,000 fine or something like that because we're supposed to be price fixing or something like that. It is expensive. We can't do it. Did you know that when we go to automotive classes, technical classes and stuff, and they start talking, they cannot tell you what to charge for a service. It's not allowed in the industry because it's called price fixing. You can drive down the road. I can go to west side of Tucson and pull into a service station, and I'll guarantee you I can price match it all the way across town. I was at a ice cream shop, and there was a guy that was there, and he wasn't at, I'm not going to tell you what the station's name was, and he was sitting there talking to somebody across town, and he says, well, how much? Well, 4 cents, 4 cents a gallon? Yeah. Well, go ahead and adjust ours 4 cents a gallon. And I'm thinking, if I did that, oh, my gosh, the roof would come off of the world because, oh, my gosh, the auto repair industry is setting the prices. Look at new cars. It's a competitive world. And you take a new car and say, okay, well, you can buy this new car for $13.99. It's a special this week. I'll bet you $100 to a donut. You can go anywhere around to another dealer, get a comparable car, and get it for that price. If that's a real price, somebody will sell you a car for that price. And so it's a little bit frustrating. But my point on the fuel economy, I went to the feed store yesterday afternoon late and picked up 4 bales of hay. That's an extra 400 pounds that I have in my Dodge diesel right now, sitting in the bed of the truck. Will it recognize that? Don't know. I haven't seen it on the gauge yet. And one of the reasons I left it in there is I wanted to see what it did on the freeway, see if there's any difference. It's something to do when you're driving and dodging traffic jams and stuff like that. And it takes fuel to create energy to move a vehicle, whether it be a diesel, a gas burner, a pickup, a car, a lawnmower, I don't care. But it takes fuel if you're going to run it wide open or you need to move a load. Unload the vehicle. Jesus. I mean, I'm only carrying 400 in a vehicle that carries 17,000. That'll tow 17,000. But all of that stuff makes a difference. Now, if you put a 400 pounds or 500 pounds in a vehicle that has low tires. Now, that's like pushing a wheelbarrow when it's empty with a low tire, and when you've got it loaded with a low tire, it's going to take more energy to actually move that son of a gun around. Is that correct, Brian?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. All right, we got to reload our coffee cups and stuff. We're going to take a break right here at the bottom of the hour. You're listening live to the Simmons Car Care Show with Brian and Jerry, and we'll be right back. And Brian's got a whole bunch of stuff over here we're going to start hitting. We'll be right back after these messages. I've been cruising on the town now. All right, welcome back to the second hour of the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show. Where'd you get this? That's
just
music.
Is that
in your air?
This is some music.
Is that yours?
Play that some more.
Play it some more, yeah. Welcome back to the Simmons Car Care Show. I'm Jerry Simmons, your host. Along with me, riding shotgun, Mr. Test First, Don't Guess, Brian Fuller, automotive specialist.
Good morning.
October is car care month, and we've got some stuff on car care. We got some actual stuff that's actually happened. So, Brian, take it away, sir.
Things that have actually happened. Like I said, we're seeing a lot of different things coming through the shop right now. Antifreeze leaks, cracked radiator tanks, leaking radiators. Had a vehicle in just yesterday that, after time, it slowly the temperature starts fluctuating up and down, getting a little bit higher than normal, and couldn't find the problem. He had gone to another shop. They had flushed it. That didn't cure the problem. As I say, always test first, don't guess. I mean, the first thing out of my mind is we need to get this vehicle in. We need to confirm a few things. Number one, we need to pressure test the cooling system, and that means pressure test the radiator, check the hoses and all the connections. Lo and behold, both of the radiator tanks were seeping where the plastic meets the header core of the radiator.
Welcome to Arizona.
You know, it's a common thing. And that was problem number one. But we're not done with just because we found the first problem. Do we have anything else going on? So when you're checking these cooling systems out, first you pressure test. And if you find a problem, then second, you need to go ahead and confirm a few other things. Like, are the radiator fans working if it has electric fans? Make sure that they're working, both on high speed, low speed, if that car has high speed, low speed operation. Some cars have one electric cooling fan, some have two. Verify that both of these fans are working. You know, these are things that just need to be done. Make sure you cover all your bases. So when you're done with that repair, you're done. And you don't have some other problem lurking in the shadows. Same goes for, you know, the computer diagnostics and different things. I got a Ford in the shop right now that, real low miles, 96, will not complete a drive cycle. You know, it's also combined with it's running rough. So I get into it, start looking around with a computer, not a code reader, because the thing didn't have any codes, and it should have. But I get into it with the Ford scanner, and lo and behold, I did find a problem. The Keep Alive Memory, there was a code for it. So I says, well, that's odd. You know, usually Keep Alive Memory codes only set if, you know, somebody cleared the codes or if somebody disconnected the battery, which in turn will clear all the monitors in the truck. But this truck had two monitors that had completed, but yet it had the Keep Alive Memory code. So that's just telling me that we've got a problem with the constant power to the computer, and that on the trip to the shop, two of those monitors passed, but yet he had about six more to go. So this is why he couldn't go through emissions. Well, upon further review, we had some problems underneath the hood. I noticed the vehicle was shaking, so I started looking around and did a cylinder balance test, which is to cancel one cylinder at a time and see if there's any fluctuation in the RPMs of the motor. So I'm going down the line. Cylinder 1's good. Cylinder 2's good. Cylinder 3's good. Cylinder 4's good. Cylinder 5, there was no fluctuation in the RPMs of the engine when it was running. Cylinder number 6 was good. So dig deeper. Like I say, test first, don't guess. Lo and behold, on this straight 6-cylinder Ford, underneath the intake plenum, I got in there with a mirror and a flashlight and found that the injector wire was chewed off. The signal wire was chewed completely off, and the power wire to that injector was only hanging on by one strand. So here's my problem with the engine misfire. Secondly, I says, well, I still got this Keep Alive Memory problem with this thing, you know, and I need to find that. So upon further review, we're looking around. Lo and behold, on the driver's side, at the bulkhead connector, there was two wires that were chewed completely off. I get into a wiring diagram. One of those wires was for the Keep Alive Memory for the computer. So in theory, if we fix these things, we should be able to, you know, have a vehicle that's running on all cylinders, and the Keep Alive Memory should be keeping energized, and we should be able to get the drive cycle ran. So, you know, that's why I say test first, don't guess. There's, you know, you could have multiple problems, and a no-code drivability problem, you got to think outside of the box and, you know, start thinking theory and operation to get this thing fixed. With the temperature changes, too, like I said, the pack rats ate this vehicle. There's going to be a whole bunch more pack rat damage coming up, I can tell you. I guarantee you. I mean, with it getting colder, these little guys are cold. They don't have any little sweaters to wear. They're going to be crawling up in your warm engine compartment looking for a place to sleep. And while they're there, they're going to say, hey, that wire looks good to chew on. So, yeah.
Hopefully they stay out of the serpentine belts. or the V-belts. They make a mess when they go through those. For some reason, the belts just really don't care. All you hear is a thump and a It's gross. Just gross. Still the best thing I found on the to keep the little boogers out of the undercarriage of a car is, one, a clean area that you're parking it in. You don't park it beside of a cactus that has a pack rat nest in it. And you need about 50 foot, a good clean. I think 100 is more appropriate. Light, you can put an extension cord and a light and lay it under the vehicle, and that seems to work as good as anything I've seen. The little Ritterettes work good if they're mounted in the proper places. But
yeah, but I've seen those guys go in and eat the Ritterettes too.
Sure, sure.
Eat the wires right off them.
Well, of course. They've got attitude.
I've seen people, though, that will take those rope lights like they put up for decoration and different things and take those and throw them down on the ground where they park.
Yep.
That seems to work.
That's what I'm saying.
If you got an extreme problem. The best thing to do is just get rid of the pack rat nest.
Yeah, but they're just like cockroaches. They just keep coming back. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned over the years of being in Arizona and working with pack rats, one, they're little stinkers, but when I first bought my property out there in 2000, I went out there and, you know, I'm looking around and I seen this big pack rat nest, and I mean, it had all the cactus, the typical built up, never cleared or cleaned or anything like that pack rat nest. It looked like a hotel, 48-inch dig with a tractor to get the base of that pack rat nest. That's underground. And pack rats only have one pack rat in a nest. I didn't know that, unless they have babies. And so when you get down in there, and then according to Chris at Mr. Pack Rat, he's opened nest up, and there's a rattlesnake and a pack rat sitting side by side. He said, unless that rattlesnake, and they only eat like every week and a half, unless it's hungry, that pack rat is safe. I'm going, you got to be kidding me. So, and he says he's opened it up. He's seen dog doo-doo, coyote doo-doo, everything that you are trying to use to keep pack rats out was inside this nest. And I'm going, okay. So just be careful. It's wintertime. Brian is absolutely correct. They're going to be coming in. They'll be coming in to keep your garage doors closed to your house, okay? They come in that way, too. Then they like to climb up the side of the house and get up under the tile roofing and get inside the attic. That'll make you mad. And that's the reason you have these peanut butter and these safety cages, you know, what do they call it?
Live trap.
Have a heart jobber. Yeah, get those. I caught 7 out of my attic with that. I didn't even know, and I still couldn't figure out how they was getting up there, other than a guy come out and looked, and he says, oh, they're climbing up, and they're going under your tile roof here where they've got access to it. They skinny up through there, eventually find an opening somewhere. And I'm going, how do you find an opening going inside of a attic that you were there and watched them put plywood on the roof before they put the roof on, and there is no holes there? How do they get in? So I guess they guess you're the one that used to be a contractor. How they get in? You know.
They found a little hole somewhere.
On cars, I know how they get in. They go on the bottom, they climb up the inside of the tire, and, well, this is a neat place to hide for the night. And as such, since they didn't get bothered that night, the next night's the same way. They've been backtracking.
If there's a will, there's a way.
I know they look big, but I've, you know, seems like they can go through a hole about the size of a quarter.
Well,
you know, I've seen them on the inside of a car before where they've gone, crawled through the grommet that goes through the firewall that's only about the size of a quarter.
Oh, yeah. Well, they also like to get in the HVAC system on the car all the way. Stinky. And then, unfortunately, you tell yourself, self, I need to get rid of these things. So you go down to exterminating place and you buy some of those little green sticks, which is rat poison. And you put them inside your frame rails on your vehicle. And the pack rat goes in, he eats that. Boy, this is yummy. So he eats it, he takes off just flying up to the front end, in behind the firewall where he's already built a nest. And that's where he expires. And now you've got to figure out how to get to that nest just to get the stinking thing out of there. People, don't put poison on your frames or in your cars, because they crawl in and die there. And then you can't, the smell, the way we got the smell out of a Ford truck from a guy that used to work at Raytheon, and his wife sent that truck into us and said, I don't care if you burn the truck. I want that smell gone. And we started, and 30 days later, after leaving the windows down during the monsoon, with everything you can do to that truck, literally everything you can do to it without burning it, we got the smell out of it. But it had to sit with the windows down through the monsoon season. It rained in there. We go out there and go, oh, this is going to be bad. But it's rain, and so, and it really didn't hurt anything. And but that's after spraying Pine Sol. That's after doing everything.
Wow.
And
but you know, we talked about
a mess.
You talk about those little green poison pills that you put out. I had a vehicle come in. They had those things out all over their yard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those little pack rats took all them little things and filled the air cleaner box with them. I don't know what they figured they were doing that for, but they filled the air cleaner box.
Well, did you find any pack rats in the air filter box?
Absolutely not. It was completely full of the poison. And all over the top of the motor.
Oh, yeah.
Down underneath the turbocharger. Uh-huh. I mean, it was just full of this stuff.
They were playing with you.
Yeah.
They knew Brian. They're like, Brian's trying to get us. We're going to be three steps ahead right now. Yeah. We're not going to eat this. We're just going to position it.
Yeah. They positioned
we're
it.
We're just
going
to put it in a very inconvenient place for a human being right now.
We've got one of the search and rescue members, Debbie. And that she has a diesel, 7.3 early model diesel. I think mm-hmm. it's a 96, 7, somewhere around there. And it quit, and it just, you know, so, okay. So, and it was out of town, so I went down, we took a look at it real quick, said, okay, nothing I can do on a Sunday and or a Saturday. And so had it picked up. She had some good insurance, said, just take it to your house, got it to the house, because it happened after she put fuel in it. And I said, okay, well, maybe you got a bad fuel or something like that, and there's no sense in playing with it in the middle of
right.
the parking lot at a restaurant.
Right.
And she towed it back in. I towed the horse trailer back in. Then Grady come out, and he, after I left, he got in it. The air filter was full of mesquite beans.
Mm.
And
that
the
before.
Fuel filter was dirty. And when you replaced the fuel filter, the air filter was just enough by blocking the air, and the fuel filter just enough by not allowing the flow of the fuel so that everything worked. It was like I got you both directions. And so he cleaned the fuel filter out, changed the fuel filter, pulled the air filter, and dumped out the mesquite beans. That's a big air filter.
And it ran fine.
And it ran fine. He's
wow.
still running it. But for you people that are parked out there, say, oh, I've never had any back rat issues.
That makes me. That reminds me of, I had a Nissan come in, a little Nissan pickup truck, little four-cylinder vehicle. And I'm going, customer comes in, and he says, this thing will not accelerate. He says, it starts, runs, doesn't seem to misfire, but it just won't go. He says, I can push on that gas pedal and just won't go. I says, gosh, let's take a look around and see what's going on. No codes in the computers, but got to looking around underneath the hood and took a look at the air cleaner. It had sucked up a sock in there.
What?
Somebody's sock got sucked up into the air cleaner box and completely blocked off the air going into the engine.
What?
I'm not making this shit up.
It's like one of those stories when you have an x-ray and someone swallows like a quarter or something.
Yep.
You're just like, how?
And so anyway, we removed the sock, and I was kind of laughing. And he says, hey, it accelerates fine now. He says, well, how much is it going to be for doing all this? I says, you know what? I don't have a labor guide to remove a sock, so it's free. It's just free today.
We had a rattle in a 72 Ford car. Right rear. And I mean, everybody and their brother had looked at this thing, and we can't find it because it needs to be rattling before you can pick it up. So we test drove it a couple of days back and forth, and we'd run it around. I drove it home one night. And I noticed that you can move it around in the back, but it's on her back rear, back right. When they made the car, they put a empty Budweiser can inside the molding, inside the fender well that was molded.
Now I'm worried.
Hey, remember when they got into putting sandwich bags, taping sandwich bags in the air conditioning so you turn it on as long as it's low speed? it would be okay, but when you turn it high speed, it would shut down. And it was sandwich bags. That was also done into manufacture during a strike is what they backed it into.
Somebody was having fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I've heard about three cases on that. But that's the first beer can I've ever found in the fender well. Anyway, I never will forget that one. It's amazing how you remember these things that actually happened to you. If you have the misfortune of whacking your car, backing it into a post, pulling it into someplace, or just want it painted, Spectrum Ina Road Auto Collision, 4425 West Ina Road. It's behind Jiffy Lube and the car wash, 744-4454. Go in there and see Echo. Go in there and see Javier or anybody else that's there. Friendly people, they'll take care of it. They are the professionals that voted number one in 2018. And so far in 2019, I guess they're holding down that number one spot for automotive collision centers in the state of Arizona. So just a good place. I mean, their work is impeccable. It's just beautiful. And they do detailing. They'll clean the headlights. Anything that can be done to this car, they can do it. As far as keeping it pretty, they can detail it out to where it looks like a new one. You don't have to go spend $25,000, $35,000, $45,000 to get a new one. You can have it detailed out. It'll look good. And then when it gets dirty again, take it back in and have it detailed again. It's a lot cheaper than a car. I used to do that with my wife, and she had that 66 Thunderbird. And she, oh, it just looks so good. Yeah, it does. I got away with it for years. Now, we were talking earlier, this is a car care month. This is when you take care of your car. And reasonably, it makes sense because now you got the changing of the seasons. You got the changing of the fuel. So in October, you go in and say, okay, now I've done run the pants off this thing through the summer months, and I've been on vacation with it. I've got everything done, but now I need to slow it down. It's almost like spring cleaning your house. Take it in, do it in October, change your fuel filters. Make sure everything is ready for the wintertime, because when it gets snow out there, and that's, we don't have that issue here in Tucson, but when it gets snow out there, since we are streamed nationwide, worldwide actually, if you're going to have snow, you need a good dependable vehicle to run, and you might as well get after it. You want to make darn sure that your electrical system is clean and operating. When you raise the hood, you look at your battery, and you need to know where your battery is located, so just raise the hood or get in your owner's manual and find it. Find the battery. See if it's got any white stuff growing on the end of the cables. If it does, take it into a professional and have that son of a gun cleaned like it's supposed to be.
Well, and or replaced.
And or replaced. And keep in mind, you can't go down to one of the Class A store, even Merle's, and get an end for a battery cable. Whack off the old end like we used to in our 55 Chevrolets.
Yeah, and put an old lead end on it.
Yeah, that, just put it back on. Yeah.
That doesn't work.
And it drops what, voltage?
Oh, yeah.
Wattage? Voltage?
You get a voltage drop.
Yeah.
You know.
Then you're scratching your head trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we found some nice battery cable ends that are like stainless that work really well. In cases like I had a Jeep come in, we had a voltage drop.
That was $400.
The cables I couldn't buy.
Right. And if you had been able to, they were $400 on those.
Oh, there was more than that. It was more than that because it was a battery cable harness, positive, negative, and it went all the way to the power distribution center. It was part of the engine harness. It was pretty complex.
Oh, yeah.
But I couldn't buy that cable assembly, and the customer really wanted to buy it. He didn't care what it cost. He wanted it. He loves his vehicle, and he wants to drive it and not have any problems. And, you know, we tried, but the part was discontinued. So I says, all right, I've got these really cool stainless cable ends that we can take, and we can cut your cable ends off, and we can strip back the insulation, clean that cable on the inside because the acid was starting to go back into the cable itself, too. Clean it up real good, and then solder heat shrink an eyelet on the end of that cable, and then the eyelet can be attached to the stud that's going around the post on the battery. Perfect connection, no voltage drop after it's done. Kind of complicated. It's more than just going and buying that little lead cable end and sticking the wire in it and tightening the two little bolts down. Those things, they don't work good. Never was a fan of those, the lead ones. They seem like, you know, after time they loosen up and they just can't be tightened or get tight enough ever. So, you know, the ones that we use when we solder, heat shrink, everything together, they seem to work real good, and then we don't have a voltage drop problem.
Right.
But these are things that you need to be looking at. I mean, the batteries, seems like every time we got a 40, 50 degree temperature swing, they're going to rear their ugly heads and say, I'm not going to work anymore. You've got that, and, you know, it seems like the cooling systems, they're affected by, you know, the temperature swing too. We'll be seeing a lot more antifreeze leaks now and into the next month, as we do in the spring, just before it gets up to 100 degrees. So it's a good idea in October, the fall, open your hood, take a look around, you know, see if you got any fluid leaks at all. They should be repaired. Contrary to belief, nothing should be leaking underneath your hood. They're all closed systems. You know, your antifreeze system is closed. Power steering should be closed. It shouldn't be leaking. Air conditioning shouldn't be leaking. If you're making excuses for your air conditioner and it's sitting there turning on and off, on and off, on and off, that's called short cycling. It's low.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to be serviced. If you don't service it, on the other hand, and continue to use it and make excuses for it, well, guess what? Eventually, you're going to get to replace that system because you didn't service it and repair the leak.
And you're going to feel the wrath of having to have your windows down at all times, mm-hmm, on the freeway and in the city, which is a pain.
Yeah, because keep in mind that, you know, even in the wintertime, you say, well, I'm not using my air conditioning. Well, if you turn the defroster on, the AC's on.
That's it. Yep.
And it's running. So if it's low on Freon, it's sitting there running low on Freon, which, on the other hand, it's running low on its lubrication because the Freon carries the lubrication throughout the system. Number one failure of air conditioning is what? Lack of lubrication. That's why they fail.
My grandson has a little Ford pickup, and he's got an AC problem. So he was saving his money to get his parts and stuff like that. And okay. He kept saving his money to get his parts and all this. And he said, yeah, it's got a leak. And I said, yeah, whatever you do, don't put any stop leak in it.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So here about a week ago, I go out. This has been going on 3 months. You know, he can always drive Grandpa's CRV.
He didn't go get one of them cans, did he?
He went and got a can. I found it. It was in the top of the garbage can, and I'm going, oh,
he didn't even try to hide it.
God.
Didn't even try to hide it. He just put it right on the top?
He just threw it in there. He probably forgot. Somebody told him, yeah, you can do this, and it'll fix everything. Yeah, it did. It's going to be fixed everything all right.
Maybe you've seen that guy on that one commercial that they used to have with the mittens that he put on. You know, put the can of Freon in, and then he went in his car and sat there with his little
mittens. He was probably
on
YouTube searching that exact thing up, and he was like, I need to do this exact thing right now.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, so it's ruined now?
Huh? I don't know. I'm not driving it. He is.
Hmm.
He's not driving my CRV either. You know, you can take a horse to water. You just can't make him drink. You know, it's not like I'm a rookie here. I've seen stuff that don't even make sense to me. Still, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. But I do know one thing that'll get into your billfold really quick. Today's driving, things change, including the way we use our cars, how we drive them, and the conditions of our roads. Normal driving is defined as steady driving in non-extreme weather or environment. In other words, driving it on stands inside your living room. Today, being a severe driver is more the rule than the exception. The automotive industry refers to severe driving as stop and go traffic. Oh, we never do that. Short commutes. We don't do that either. Heavier loads, cargo, passengers, or towing a trailer. Rough or mountainous roads. Dusty or salty environments. Driving the car before it has a chance to warm up, and or driving in extreme hot or cold weather. Buddy, we pretty much name all that stuff. The only thing we don't have, I mean, we have all of this. The one thing I'd like to address is the driving in before the car warms up. It's recommended on these late model cars now you fire them up, put it in gear, and go. Because it says it's better. But I'll tell you another little thing. on my transmission in my 2018 Dodge, it says it will run a little shift erratic until the transmission fluid wakes up and warms up. So, heads up. All right, we got to take a break here at the top of the hour. You're listening live to the Simmons Car Care Show with Jerry and Brian. We'll be right back after these messages.